Good afternoon. Hope you had a good break. Still a little bit warm in here. Our next speaker is one of our most prolific kit builders and designers.
You can do that. It's not on the master.
What do you want?
Oh, no. Leave it. It's
okay.
Fine.
And he's coming up with a new design for a software-defined radio, or actually implementing a new design for software-defined radio. No, I'm congratulating. He's now the new vice president of Tapper.
Thank you.
Okay, here's Steve Bible.
I'd like to introduce a new topic and basically a new direction for amateur radio. And I will probably ask you at the end of the talk if you agree with me or not, but I want to entertain your thought and your ideas with respect to software-defined radios. And of course, you're probably asking, what is a software-defined radio? And that's what this lecture is all about. It's going to give you that definition and give you some examples. And then my goal here is to really fire you up. Okay, because I got some neat stuff here that I think you would really like to get involved with. Okay, let's talk about why a software-defined radio. Let's get some motivation. Why, and then I'll give you the definition of what a software-defined radio is, and then I'll give you some block diagrams so that you can visually see what this radio is, and then I'll show you some of the technical challenges, what amateurs can contribute to this field, and then I'm going to show you how you can build one today. And I have one that's sitting up here in the chair right now, and it has been in the demo room all day today and yesterday, and it'll be in the demo room later on tonight and tomorrow. Then I'll show you some supporting documentation, QST, QEX articles, and sources on the web, and then we'll conclude. But let's get some motivation here of why we should be doing this. And I'm going to quote from the ARRL that they say, ARRL is most interested in this proceeding, speaking about if you look at the bottom here, this is taken from a very recent FCC notice of inquiry regarding software-defined radios, and it's dated June 14 of 2000. This has only been a couple of months ago. The FCC is interested in this technology. A notice of inquiry is the FCC's way of going out to the public and saying, we're asking your opinions, your comments. What do you think about this technology? Now, you can go to this web page right here. And this is the web page to do searches for the FCC. Enter docket number 0047. And you'll find not only the ARRL's comments, but you'll find the original submission by the FCC, and also what industry submitted as their comments back to the FCC. But let's get back up here to what the ARRL said in their comments to the FCC's notice of inquiry. The ARRL is most interested in this proceeding, not only because of the utility of the amateur radio service as a testing ground for different configurations of SDRs, but also because of the potential long-term opportunities for SDRs to affect substantial changes, even conceptual changes, in traditional frequency assignment and spectrum allocation decision-making in all services. And I could emphasize, for effect, substantial changes, conceptual changes, to traditional frequency assignment and spectrum allocations. Okay? What is this all about? Let me also quote Dale Hatfield, a ham. He also was our keynote speaker at the Chicago DCC some two years ago. He happens to be the chief of the Office of Engineering and Technology at the FCC. And the OET is the technical arm of the FCC. They do all of the engineering, technical analysis, and report to the commissioners and staff of the FCC. This is the most technical, hot-running engineering group in the FCC. Dale Hatfield, a ham W0IFO, is the head of the OET. He spoke to AMRAAD's 25th anniversary dinner, June 17th. And you can download his speech at this webpage. But Dale said, this could stimulate a whole new generation of amateur innovation that not only includes the more spectrally efficient systems I mentioned earlier, but also radios that could adapt to their environment as well. What kind of radio is this? Here's the definition of a software-defined radio. Performs the majority of signal processing in the digital domain using programmable digital signal processors and hardware support, but some signal processing is still done in the analog domain, such as the radio frequency and the intermediate frequency circuits. So what we're saying here is we're going to design a radio, and the hardware, the normal portion or the block section in a radio that normally does the modulation and demodulation, is going to be done in signal processing hardware. What our goal is to basically get to what's called a software radio. This is our goal. The software-defined radio is actually a stepping stone to this ultimate goal, where the software radio, this is the ultimate device where the antenna is connected directly to an analog-to-digital controller, digital-to-analog converter, and all signal processing is done digitally using fully programmable high-speed digital signal processors. All functions, modes, applications, etc. can be configured by software. There is no more mixers. There's no more local oscillators. That's all done in math. It's all done digitally. It's all done in DSP hardware. Now, imagine this radio that's programmable. Now you can buy, and I envision that ultimately, the ultimate ham radio that you're going to purchase is going to be a black box. It's going to have three connectors on it. It's going to have power. It's going to have an antenna. It's going to have an Ethernet jack on it. There's no knobs. There's an on-off switch, more than likely. But you're going to connect that up to a network or up to a computer. That radio can be slow scan on 20 meters. It can be upper sideband on 6 meters. It can be CW at 2 meters. PPSK 31. It can be voice. And what we're going to do is we're going to use a computer or a PC to be the front end or the control panel. Now we can do things like if we want to do voice compression, we do that in DSP. And then we manipulate waveforms using our mouse on the PC screen. Now you've got a radio that's not going to become obsolete. Now you've got a radio that ham so-and-so wrote a program for, and it's in QST, and he wants to go download it and give it a try. Now you can create new digital modes. Or you can try, you know, traditional modes. Or you can try your hand at programming CW. But now the radio is no longer in the analog domain. You don't have to worry about, you know, spurious outputs from a doubly balanced mixer. So the benefits of a software-defined radio is the flexibility that it has through its reprogrammability. It has reduced obsolescence. It enhances experimentation because now you don't have to have a dedicated piece of hardware to do one thing. And it also brings together the analog and digital world together. It is a new breed of radio. Did I mention that it's reprogrammable? It can be any band. It can be any mode. It can be spread spectrum. It can be frequency hopping or direct sequence. It's all done in software. And then we can make it networkable because we can put an Ethernet jack on it and give this thing an IP address. And now the sky's the limit on how we want to connect this thing. And we can have simultaneous channels, much like when you heard Matt Ettis's talk about spread spectrum radio for the ISS, you can have multiple channels. And then again, to emphasize that you're bringing the digital networks and a full convergence of the digital networks and radio science, meaning we're bringing digital and analog together. So here's the block diagram of what a software-defined radio looks like. Now, this is pretty traditional because we see that we have an antenna, goes into an RF amplifier, goes into the first mixer, and I'm noticing my color choices are bad here because it's gotten washed out. That should be a mixer signal, a mixer symbol. And here is usually your variable frequency oscillator that allows you to tune the radio. And then you have a second mixer to a local oscillator. So here's your RF domain. Now this has been down converted into an intermediate frequency. Here's your intermediate frequency domain. Goes through a bandpass filter, and then it's finally into what we call baseband. And this is a second IF frequency here. Now on a DSP radio, what we're going to do is we're going to have our analog to digital converter and our digital analog converter and our DSP at this point. Okay? Normally in an analog radio, this is where you're going to have your modulation demodulation. If it's going to be an FM radio, you usually have a variactor diode that you modulate with. You have a microphone amplifier, and then that energy modulates a variactor diode, and that gives you FM. Well, the beauty thing about this is in this programming, this DSP, this can be CW. This can be lower sideband. This can be packet radio. This can be PSK31. Okay? We can do all of this today. And I'm going to show you a radio that's right here in front of me that's exactly like this. Well, again, our goal is to get that analog to digital converter closer to the antenna. So this is an intermediate step where we're going to take away that second mixer. Once technology gets to the point where this analog to digital converter, digital analog converter is fast enough and has enough dynamic range. And actually, you can buy this chip today. It's not going to be, it's probably going to be a $60 chip, but tomorrow this is going to be a $10 chip. Everything that you learned here is applicable here. And then, of course, here's our DSP. So intermediate step, final step, we want the analog to digital converter, digital analog converter, right after the low noise RF amplifier from the antenna. All of the RF mixing, IF mixing, everything's done in software right here. And then everything that you learned in the intermediate step here and the beginning step here are applicable here. All you do is you change the variables. Well, that kind of leads into the fact that if I can turn my entire radio digital, what does that open up for me? Because that's one thing to replace that analog components with digital, and I get all those big digital benefits, okay, that we always read about and learn about. But doesn't that also lead to the fact that now we can have a smart radio? In the past, we've been trained as radio operators. In fact, the FCC rules say that. We are training a pool of radio operators. Because the radio we operate today is a dumb device. That radio, in and of itself, does not go out and transmit and cause interference. It's the idiot behind the key. Right? And the radio operator uses gray matter as the smarts that's operating that circuit. Okay? So we've been radio operators guided and trained to follow the rules of engagement, carefully crafted. And it is. It's a craft. If you think about DX chasers and weak signal chasers, it's a craft. Now, don't get me wrong. We're not getting rid of these craftsmen. In fact, we can make a radio that's even more enticing to them during the course of decades to prevent harmful interference to other users. Why can't we make a radio that has all the smarts for us? So now we've got total control of the radio functions by software. We're going to develop algorithms and embed them and create a smart communications device. It'll directly affect the manner in which the device uses spectrum. Today, the spectrum is allocated in slices, in channels. With a smart radio, wouldn't it make more sense to have what's called the open range model? That there's a huge swath of frequencies. You fire up your ham radio. Instead of you finding an open spot, the radio does it for you. Not only does it figure out a clear frequency for you, but it figures out what the sunspot is today and what location it's at and what you're trying to do and what's the distance to that other radio, and it figures out what modulation's best. Then we combine the software radio's ability to monitor the RF environment, precisely sense its location. The software radio opens up a possibility of sharing spectrum among vastly different users. Remember what the ARRL said in the beginning. Remember what Dale Hatfield said in the beginning. Well, if we're going to have smart radios, there's another phrase to coin here and to define for you. And it's called a cognitive radio. This radio is going to become aware of its existence. So who's the first here to design the algorithms for the first HAL radio? Radios will embed increasingly complex and realistic models of their environments, users, and networks. They begin to approach what an outside observer might call rational or common sense behavior. Next thing you know, we're going to have a radio digital rights bill. Now, you chuckle, and you remember this talk 10, 20 years from now, okay? And you'll pull out of your library the DCC 19th anniversary proceedings and show your grandchildren how radio used to be. Technical challenges that face us as amateurs and researchers and commercial people today is to be able to have the dynamic, and this is a typo. I didn't mean to write dynamic radio. I should have put dynamic range. We want to be able to get those weak signals way down there in the noise. Yet we don't want our next door neighbor who's running a contest 1,000 watts. To blow descents our radio. That's dynamic range. The other thing is what's keeping us from going to that transition point and what's ultimately keeping us from becoming a software radio is the fact that the analog to digital controllers, the digital analog controllers are not fast enough. And then, of course, the algorithms are not made. These are just a smattering of the challenges that face us today. There's actually more of them, but these are probably some real predominant ones. And then the amateur contributions to all of this are many, and you notice it's blank right now. And that's not to say that we have no contribution, because I think and I hope that the ideas are churning into your mind that amateurs can contribute to this technology. We can build software-defined radios today, start programming these algorithms, start doing these experiments, and get ahead of the curve. Time is now to get on this wave. This has been a research topic since the early 90s. The DARPA has a military radio they call Speakeasy. They've done this already. Amateurs have a version of this too. And I want to show you how you can build your own software-defined radio. Now, how many here read QST? How many of you remember reading these articles? Let's go to this article right here, the R2 DSP by Rob Frong, KL7NA. It was back in April of 98. The thing of it is, you probably didn't realize that you were reading about a software-defined radio. So part of my introducing this term to you today is to get you in line with the terminology that's being used in the research community and the commercial community. Because hams have been calling these all along as DSP radios or digital radios. So now that I've told you that phrase, you can probably say, oh, I remember reading about. Now, Kenwood has the 870, which they call a DSP radio. And I've asked Kenwood the question, does the DSP in that radio just do simple audio filtering, or does it do the modulation and demodulation, which would then make it a software-defined radio? Okay, I'm still awaiting an answer on that. But what I want to clarify is that if it's just simple audio filtering, it's not really a software-defined radio, because you can't reprogram that radio into doing other modes. If you can program it to be sideband, upper or lower, or to do PSK1, or to do slow scan TV, then it's a software-defined radio. But what I want to introduce you to is the DSP-10 that was recently in QST, September, October, November 99. Here's two good web pages right here to go and research this particular radio. But Bob Larkin, W7PUA, designed this radio, and this is what I have to demonstrate to you here today. Another one is a good article that's in QST, is an article about the panoramic transceiving system for PSK31. This technically is a software-defined radio. My only disappointment with this article is that the source code's not available. But there's no reason why you can't build this hardware and then write the source code to make that hardware into anything you want. They made it to where it was 20 meters with a wide enough IF to be able to do PSK31. But there's no reason why you can't go back and program that hardware any way you want. So let me introduce to you the DSP-10. Is this unit in this box right here, you can see he's got a CW key and a microphone, but addition here is this computer. Now, one thing to make sure that you don't make the distinction of is that, let's take, for example, ICOM has the PCR-1000, and then there's the WIN radio. Those are what I would call software-controlled radios, because the commands that go across that line, the serial line, are basically frequency up, frequency down, volume up, volume down. That's no fun. What's fun is when fast Fourier transforms come over the serial line, and then you can display a waterfall display. Okay? Here's what it looks like on the inside. On the bottom of the case is what's called the RF board. That is, if you think back to the block diagram, this is where the first two mixers are, and then the DSP is inside this box. And then the serial connector here, that carries basically the commands to be able to program the synthesizers in the RF board. Here's a sample of the display possible for the DSP-10. Here you can tune the frequency. You got a signal level meter. You can adjust the microphone gain. It even has programmed in it, you can do CW. So when you type on the keyboard, it sends CW for you. And then you can set up the transmit power, which, by the way, this radio puts out 20 milliwatts. It's designed to connect to transverters or a 2-meter amplifier. And then down here, you've got your, you can set up how you want the window to display, whether Hamming, spectral average value, then you have your audio frequency and RF gain. And then you notice the time ticks here. And then you have here what we call a waterfall display, and then this is what's called a one-line display. Notice the raw information. You got A to D level, D to A level. You got all the raw RF at your fingertips, not a controlled radio. Now here's the block diagram, and it looks vaguely familiar to that general block diagram I showed you. You've got two TR switches here. This is the receive path for the RF amplifier through a bandpass filter. Here's your first mixer, a bandpass filter, second mixer, low pass filter, and then it's fed into the analog devices. And that, of course, is everything that's inside the dotted lines here. Goes in here, gets digitized, and then what you're seeing here is a block diagram of the software algorithms that are running inside the DSP. Then it goes out, it gets amplified, and then to a speaker. Now the transmit path is the microphone's over here, goes in, gets digitized. Now you can do, if you're doing sideband, you can do voice compression and DSP. Comes out the digital analog converter into an amplifier and then re-injected back into the IF chain and then back out. Here's some supporting documentation. These are QEX articles. The article by Doug Smith is a four-part article, and it all happens to be online in PDF format at the ARRL.org web page that I have up there. And it's a tutorial. It literally walks you through what is DSP in Chapter 1. Chapter 2 tells you how to design a digital radio. Well, substitute digital radio for software-defined radio. And then 3 and 4 go into some advanced techniques. Another good article is The Basics of Digital Receiver Design by Brad Brannan. And that was an article that's reprinted out of Electronic Design News. And, of course, Brad being a ham and got permission from EDN to reprint it. Very good tutorial about how to build a software-defined radio. And then a lot of the software, the DSP software that does a lot of the modulation, demodulation, and audio filtering, comes from Johann Forer's article back in September of 96 of QEX. So you can see this stuff's been around a long time. We just never really put it all together. All right, so that pretty much finishes the introduction, and that should whet your appetite and say, hey, these are the kinds of things that are available for me to do today. So what I'm going to do for you right now is demonstrate the DSP-10 quickly here. Now, the first thing I've got to do is load the code into the DSP-10 that turns it into a radio. And I'm using this program that comes from Analog Devices that loads it into the DSP kit that we're using. So we're going to load up the program's called UHF3, so this is all binary information that's being downloaded into the radio. This has now given the radio its personality and its functions. and what it's capable of doing. And it's done. Now those up front heard a click because now it's starting to receive. Now we bring up the DSP10 screen. Now one of the things I can do is I'm going to press F8 here and nothing's going to happen. Okay. I'm going to press F8 and notice the audio frequency gain is going up. Now what I've done is I put it on 144.39 because obviously there's a lot of packet going on. It's not programmed to do packet right now, but I've got it selected on FM. Now this number 33 is actually the squelch setting. So I'm clicking on Alt S to reduce the squelch. Now I'm going to click on Alt D and increase the squelch. Okay? And then what you're seeing here is the one line display, and then you're seeing, of course, the waterfall display. There's the Zulu time ticks, and every time you see the packet go across, you see the spectral display. Now, packets made up basically of two tones, 1200 baud and 2200. So you can see here that there's some TNCs out there that are not tuned properly. Now, I can change the look of the display. Notice up here I can change the spectral display. And it's interesting. You'll have to look at the colors. The colors are kind of getting washed out up here. This is kind of funny looking. But now notice that I've changed that level of noise is that color. And then, of course, anything higher than that becomes, you know, basically green to yellow to red. So there's a visualization. And this is called the color palette. And hams are experimenting with this color palette to be able to identify weak signals. Now, this radio is obviously FM. And if I hit Alt-M, now it's CW. And now I hit Alt-M, it's upper sideband. Now it's lower sideband. Now it's back to FM. Those are the modes it can do right now. Yes?
What about the technology, you know, digital radios, I know you're using a DOS program. Is there a Windows interface for it?
The creator, Bob Larkin, made it in DOS. Okay? And to answer your question, no, there's not. But you see, are you ready? You willing? Let's get going. Okay, there's some people I've talked to today that started on a Linux port of this. There is a mailing list that's called, that's DSP10, it's DSP-10@QTH.net. So just go to QTH.net, click on list, and join the DSP10 list. And then you'll hear about all the people that have this radio up and running. Now it's not a kit. It's an article in QST. You got to get the parts together and put it together. It's not for the faint at heart. But Tapper is considering taking this on as a kit. Okay? So I'd like to hear from you after the talk, you know, what your ideas are about this technology, what you would like to see. Would you be willing to delve into this experimentation? Would you like a kit? Because we're going to seriously consider putting this out as a kit. I put it together by collecting all the parts, and it worked. And I was very proud of myself. And I'm very, you know, proud of the workmanship and the craftsmanship that I went into it, and invite you to take a look at it and give me oohs and ahs, because that really fires me up. But think about the things you can do, because what fires me up more is actually when you guys take it on and you guys experiment with it and you guys enjoy it. Okay? That's what really fires Tapper up. And we want to be able to start on a roadmap where it's working on this technology. Because the benefits are just incredible. This radio is basically a radio for everybody. It's a radio for the EME. It's the radio for the weak signal. It's the radio for the packet enthusiast. It's the radio for the HF digital PSK31 enthusiast. You just run the program. There's nothing this radio can't be. Yes, sir.
One thing I guess I like about this is the fact that, unlike other things we heard about earlier, obsolescence probably will affect a radio like this last. If something new comes out, you can download it rather than have out-of-date chips to worry about.
And that is correct, because the obsolescence issue is much less of an issue. Think about a ham, and we're all on limited budgets. We can't spend every, you know, dollar we want to on this, you know, lovely hobby. You guys spend more because you obviously travel here to do that. But imagine spending, you know, what would probably amount to about $400, $500, that for a radio that you know that you can swap programs with on the internet. This is something. Think of the learning potential of this. How many of you RF people, and how many are RF people in the audience, have been putting off learning digital? Or how many of you digital people have been putting off learning RF or analog? You've got both worlds here. Okay? Because now you can learn that analog domain via formulas. You know, then you can impress your professors and your teachers. You know, let your 14-year-old daughter take this to school as a science fair project. Yes?
What are the legal issues of coming up with a new modulation, new processors, like carrying something on the air that's not defined?
Well, I can answer that one of two ways. One, and I'll be polite. My polite answer is that the FCC wants us to experiment. Didn't I just show you what Dale Hatfield said? Now, of course, one man in the FCC does not make the whole FCC make. Okay? But as long as it's well published, and we can do that so easy on the internet today, and it's reproducible, there's no problem with that. And I'm sure the League would help us out on the legal issues of that. My unpolite answer is, who cares? Now, of course, you don't want to be an island unto yourself, okay? So naturally, it's going to get propagated and stuff. But the thing of it is, if you read Part 97, you're going to see that you're not limited to exact modulation modes, okay? You're open to do anything you want. Amateur radio service, by definition, is an experimental service. Okay? Yes, sir.
Actually, it's in relation to that. Where do you see, and it's really not a technical question, but where do you see the FCC coming down on this from a regulatory standpoint? And when the day comes about where you can basically download a program off the internet and put anything on the air, we as hams have a gift to do that. We have been given the ability to experiment.
Right.
They don't want the rest of the world sending CW on emergency frequencies, for example. And if the radios don't care, is there going to be a time that comes along where you're going to have to download authorized software?
What's interesting is go back and read that software-defined radio notice of inquiry and read what the FCC's asking. And I don't have enough time to go over that. Now, I do have it in my briefcase, and I could show it to you. Then I challenge you to read industry's comments back. You will be really surprised. And to say that industry is embracing this with both arms is wrong. Some is, some are not. Because of sticky issues like you're describing. Thank goodness we don't have all of the restrictions that commercial users have. We have a freedom that you're correct, that we have a privilege that nobody else has. So we should expound upon that. We really should, because now we can contribute in ways that the commercial world can't. See where we can get on this wave and ride it? Okay? But the only way I can fully answer your question is do the reading of that. Okay? There was a gent back here. All right, then we're back to you for number three.
taking that a step further, I think it would be very difficult under current rules to have a radio like this available for sale. If we just wanted to work on the software side of it, I doubt if we'd be able to buy such a radio. We're kind of running into that right now with the current Kenwood models. The reason that we can't do the firmware upgrade is because it does put the FCC...
Incorrect. Amateur radios are not type accepted. There's no requirement to type accept an amateur radio.
The answer to this question is the fact that Kenwood has to type accept, has to have their radio pass type accept.
But it's not.
If I built a radio, I don't have to have anybody type accept.
Ed, can you clarify on that?
Yeah, I believe that the reason some of the Kenwood radios need to be type accepted is because they are scanning receivers, which is a class that's required to be actually certificated under Part 15.
Okay, that's what I'm... Thank you, Ed. They are not being type accepted because of the frequencies they're on. They're being type accepted because they're computing devices. It's a whole separate, different type of acceptance.
Yeah, and it's not even the computing devices. It's the fact that it's a scanning receiver.
Okay, a scan. Now, is that starting to make sense?
I still think that the transmitter has to... The manufacturers have approved that the transmitter... Commercial.
No! Amateurs do not have to...
Commercial.
You're right. The commercial manufacturers have to type accept spectral purity.
My point is, we'll never see this type of radio available for sale from the big companies. We'll have to continue to make it ourselves.
Well, let's drive them to it.
Well, why not? Because right now we can buy radios and modify them anyway.
Right.
So if they buy something open source or whatever, we modify it, we're
modifying. See,
the
manufacturer...
You're going to find these because that's what the proceeding is all about.
Yes.
The FCC wants this technology across the board.
Right.
It goes our way if it got made.
It
doesn't.
It's going to go the FCC's way.
No. All right. We're into a rousing discussion here, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to close this, and then...
We got Q&A in 10 minutes.
Okay. And what he said. And we can discuss this out in the hallway at dinner and other times and online. You guys are bringing up very, very good points. Okay. And we need to clarify these issues. But as the amateur radio rules stand today, there are no encumbrances. Correct, Ed?
That's correct. Any publicly documented digital mode, with very few exceptions, can be used in the amateur radio service. That's what allowed PSK-31 to spring out of the woodwork.
Right. Yes, sir.
I'd just like to make one quick comment on that. You know, the FCC and the AWRL really want to see things like that happen, and we're encouraging amateurs to do this. But our own worst enemies are ourselves.
Yes.
We sit around and say, well, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Yes, you can.
There's too many kilocycle cops out there. Ask for forgiveness later. The FCC will not write you a ticket and fine you in that ticket. They write you a ticket saying, what are you doing? Will you explain your actions? And then you write a polite letter back saying, I'm doing this, that, and the other thing. And then they look at it and go, oh, okay. So don't be afraid to do this. Now, every one of you has a different talent, and this radio offers something for everybody. If you want to build the hardware, it's there to do. Wait until it's a kit, or wait until it's a finished product, and if you're a software person, wait until it's something that you can do in software. So I wanted to fire you up. Did I fire you up?
Yeah.
Let's go have dinner!
No,
I'm
not.
All right, what... now Doug's sitting there saying, no, you can't eat. Okay, one last thing here. How many radios when you boot them up, you have to boot your radio up? Watch, listen to this.
EasyTip Lite is fully functional and ready.
Thank you, folks.